It's been a long week. We've talked about what draws voters to Donald Trump, talked about a deadly fungus that affects George's bats, and we got a preview of some music from this weekend's Stopover Music Festival. Now it's time to sit back, relax, and celebrate Friday. How about that? Let's head into the break room.
This is the Anger Room, a new Dallas business where people pay to turn their frustration into destruction, one swing at a time.
So when I hear adults say, well, I don't like a big church. I like about 200. I want to be able to know everybody. I say, you are so stinking selfish.
So in a world where everything seems to cost extra on airplanes, some people are arguing that overweight passengers should cough up cash for packing their extra pounds.
Joining us in the break room, Natalie Dale, spokeswoman for the Georgia Department of Transportation. Welcome back, Natalie.
Thank you.
Amy Condon is in Savannah, actually. She's the associate editor for Savannah Magazine. Good to have you again, Amy.
Good morning, all.
Sam Burnham curates the All the Biscuits in Georgia blog. Good to have you again, Sam.
Ah, thank you.
And Kalina Bowler is the co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. Hi, Kalina.
Hello. Good morning.
Let's start with something I'm sure none of us miss. Homework. Spring break, of course, right now. That's when many people get away from classes, teachers, and usually kids are not assigned homework. But I knew that was coming and it still got me. Maybe kids should never have to do homework. Maybe young kids anyway. A researcher at Duke University says there is no evidence that homework actually improves academic performance at the elementary school level. In fact, too much time spent on homework can have a negative effect on young kids as they age. But our kids, American kids, I should say, already have the shortest school days, the shortest school years. Is doing away with homework the solution to what's happening?
Well, I'll start out with that. I'm married to an award-winning educator, and I have a kid in elementary school. And I think one of the problems that we have is we could replace this homework with more effective education time, the instructional time. We spend too much time working on the standardized testing, and we've actually, in Georgia, have tied 50% of a teacher's performance evaluation at the end of the year to their students improving their test scores. Well, if you take my elementary son, he made 99%, made 99 percentile on his score. How is his teacher going to improve that? You know, that's that's not exactly
fair. I feel
like this
is just a way for you to brag about your kids.
No, because I can go back to another one of my sons who has a learning disability. And how is, you know, is that really fair to tie his test score to a teacher's performance? And, you know, if my youngest son comes back with a 97 percentile this year, which is a fantastic score, it actually looks bad on his teacher.
Oh, yeah, because he's lost 2%.
Right.
I think those younger years, especially elementary school, it's really where kids sort of dip their toe into the pool on things like extracurricular activities and hobbies and things they like to do. And so I really appreciate after school time as a time for them to be able to learn outside of classroom, outside of reading, writing, and arithmetic, sports or things like chess and hobbies, things that they want to do. Because when you look at getting into college these days, it's more than just test scores. And so I think we need to start breeding a culture of kids that really expand themselves outside the classroom. Because for me, when I was getting into college, and I know it's become even more so since then, that educators look at what you do outside the classroom as well as what you do inside the classroom. And if we're not giving them any time outside of the classroom to sort of explore those, then where will they be when they're older?
Yeah, my yes. son started getting a lot of homework in grade one, and he was six.
Mm. Well, I'm going to take the Angel's Advocate thing on this one, because I was one of the rare elementary school kids that loved homework. I did. I actually used to pretend in pre-K that I came home with homework. I would have random papers and write big letters on everything. Like, I did my homework. But I will say I was in a school, and albeit it was a private school, that expanded what the homework looked like. So it actually felt like I was learning about the hobbies and things that I like to do. But that was my homework, because I had to come back to school and report on what I did when I got home. So you know what I mean? Maybe doing away with quote-unquote homework is not necessarily the thing to do, but I think we should change what it looks like for elementary school kids.
Okay, well, Go ahead, Amy.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I've had a conversation here a couple of times with a fellow named Dan Suen, who does a lot of research on how people learn or even how you can reshape education. And he really brings it down to that students, especially in elementary, if they're not moving, if they don't have a way to sort of, especially during the middle parts of the day and even after school, after they've been sitting a long time, they aren't learning. Because the physical activity is tied directly to their ability to process information. So he even advocates sort of like completely rethinking how we do elementary and how we structure the school day. And what he was talking about with one of the conversations we had, it sounded an awful lot like elementary that I had in the 1970s, where you had reading time, you had recess, you had music classes. And so you were having all these different things that sort of stimulate your brain throughout the day, and you had more time in the school day. So they learned better.
We have about a minute left here, and I wanted to touch on something, move away from school and talk more about vacation and whether or not you would spend your vacation inside a slave quarters. That one South Carolina man is on a mission to visit every former slave residence in the country and spend a night there. This is what he calls a slave dwelling project. But we have about a minute, and I'm wondering which of you would do this.
Kalina will not.
Fair enough.
I'm not opposed to it. It's just not a vacation thing to me. I think it's an educational tool. While we're back on elementary kids, that's a great field trip for elementary kids and even an overnight thing. But as far as a vacation, it's probably not high on my list.
I don't know that I'd do it for a vacation, but being a history buff, I think that's a great experiential learning tool to be immersed in the history rather than just reading about it or doing homework about it.
Amy?
I totally agree with Sam on that. I'm not sure I would call it a vacation, but the experience and the learning aspect of it, I would really appreciate that.
Okay, Kalina?
Yeah, no, it's not happening. I mean, it shouldn't have. This is just my, as a Black woman, something about that just does not sit well with me. I know they have museums and I know they have exhibits. Those things are fine to visit. But if you were to immerse yourself in a situation where you're trying to learn what people went through, I don't see how spending the night in a place like that or in a concentration camp or in a Japanese internment camp would actually be beneficial no matter what your age is.
It is Friday. We're hanging out in the break room this morning with Sam Burnham of All the Biscuits in Georgia blog, Natalie Dale with the Georgia Department of Transportation, Amy Condon with Savannah Magazine, and Kalina Bowler of the Real Snobs podcast. And we want to say thank you so much, speaking of Savannah, to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They've donated the coffee that is fueling our break room guests this morning. We couldn't do it without you. They are online at savannahcoffee.com. So let's move on to church. We went to school. Let's go to church. A pastor of a mega church here in Georgia got a lot of pushback when he called people who attend small churches selfish.
We want churches to be large enough so that there are enough middle schoolers and high schoolers that we don't have one youth group with middle school and high school together. We want there to be so many adults that there will be so many middle school and high school kids that we can have two separate environments. So when I hear adults say, well, I don't like a big church. I like about 200. I want to be able to know everybody. I say, you are so stinking selfish. You care nothing about the next generation.
That is Andy Stanley. He's the senior pastor at North Point Community Church in Atlanta. He later tweeted an apology saying, quote, "The negative reaction to the clip from last weekend's message is entirely justified. Heck, even I was offended by what I said. I apologize." But let's go back to why he said that. Any validity to that argument?
I could not disagree more. And I was raised Catholic, and I still attend Catholic church. And so I do my religion probably a little differently than mega churches do. But I go back to the Bible saying, whenever two or more are gathered in my name, there is love. That is church.
Amen.
And so to me, church is you and me. Church is whoever wants to share the message together. And so I think this is so off base. And I, even being Catholic, I listen to Andy Stanley's message many times, and he has some great things. I just think this is so off base.
Okay. Mm. What about his point about having enough people there so that the kids can get their own classroom?
I would be much more concerned about what my kids are going to hear while they're there. Are they actually going to receive a message that's going to enrich their faith more than if they're going to be in some program for middle schoolers and high schoolers. I mean, I'm not taking them to church. You know, if I'm not supposed to look at it as a social club, then I'm not expecting them to either. I mean, that's not what it's about.
I was raised Christian, and I've been to a number of churches from the, you know, the small churches, you know, with 50 people to the mega churches with, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And I think that it is an individual's preference. You shouldn't just automatically say, well, if you don't attend a mega church, you're selfish. Well, you know, somebody who is a part of the faith may not want to be in a room full of thousands of people. They may have anxiety about that. And, you know, that for some people blocks their, you know, receiving of the word, if that's what they're there for. So maybe they need to go to a smaller church, and maybe people like to have the, you know, being anonymous in a large church and just doing their deeds, you know, individually, and, you know, not many people focusing on that. I don't know. It's an individual preference. So I don't think it's a selfish thing at all.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another individual preference, and that's what you drink. We serve coffee here in the break room. Let me make that perfectly clear. It is not beer, but there is a problem brewing for some people who do serve cold ones here in Georgia. Some craft brew sellers. There's actually a lot of restrictions on craft brewers in this state. One rule is that breweries cannot actually just sell beer. They have to sell tours, and then you can get samples of beer if you go on the tour. But a brewery in Athens may have to shut down after a visit from an undercover cop. The police officer says she was not offered a tour and was instead allowed to buy a beer there anyway. The law's the law, but critics say maybe this just points out how silly that law is. What do we think? Should we loosen up the reins on our craft breweries?
Yes.
I think we should.
Amy?
There's a whole spirit of entrepreneurship and young people and all different people starting businesses around craft brewing, which was hobbies that have grown into real businesses. And why would we want to impede businesses? I really don't understand why you would hold them to a separate standard than you would a bar.
I
just don't get it.
I think disagreeing with the law, which many people do, you know, the step to get the law changed is to talk to your legislator, is to start a grassroots effort. And there's been a lot of talk in the Capitol about getting this law changed and sort of upgraded and updated. But disagreeing with the law and then not obeying a law that is on the books are two very different things to me. Like, whether you agree with the law or not, whether you think it's asinine or not, you still have to follow it. And they're very aware what the law is. So while I hear it, that it sort of diminishes what brewers can do, you still have to follow it till it gets changed.
I believe in rule of law. I see what the law says, but I'm gonna speak out against this law. I think, you know, you got a local business that can make a local profit or a local product with local labor. Why in the world would we allow an Applebee's to come in and sell beer made wherever, but these people can't sell beer to their neighbors that they made right there in town?
They're often growing their own honey or using local honey growers for different things. I mean, they're part of a chain of commerce that keeps money within communities, and this impedes them, just like a lot of the laws for farmers impede smaller farms from being able to compete against corporate farms. And that's sort of anti-capitalism if we have a state that believes in fair market.
Fair enough. If that makes you really, really mad, then I have an option for you. One way to take out your anger may be to rent what's called a rage room. A company in Toronto lets people pay $20 to destroy a room. And I mean literally. You get to break the china, flip the furniture, smash wine glasses if you want. You can choose what it is that you want to break. There's like a menu of breakables. And you also get to select the soundtrack to your rage. They let you pick the music and maybe some Limp Bizkit.
It's just one of those days where you don't want to wake up. Everything is, everybody sucks. You don't really know why, but you want to justify. And someone's head off.
Okay, I'm just kidding. Actually, everyone knows listening to Limp Bizkit just makes you angrier, but
I feel worse.
Yeah. Okay. What song would we pick?
Well, there you go. There's the first one. Amy would go, obviously. What music would you play, Amy?
I'm trying to think. What was that song that Suicidal Tendencies did for Repo Man back in the early 80s? It was kind of awesome. I can't remember the name of it, though.
I don't know, but you would go, Amy. You would find.
Oh, I think we're going to have a lot of these in November. no matter what happens, someone's going to be pissed. So I have a feeling that there's going to be a run on these coming forward. And maybe Donald Trump needs one right now.
I think the song you're thinking of, by the way, is Institutionalized.
Yes, that's it.
For the Repo Man soundtrack. Yeah,
I'm not sure I would actually go do this, but I think I would love to cover it for a story. I got to be honest about that.
It would make good sound. Kalina, would
and
you go?
And the photography would be great.
I would not go because anything that to me looks like and sounds like, you know, breaking things and glass smashing, that's violence. That's anxiety.
It would make you more upset.
Correct. It would make me more anxious and more, you know, nervous. I'm like, why is all this glass in China breaking around me? And, you know, put me in a room full of big fluffy pillows that I can scream into. That's a different situation.
Well, okay. So there we go. Sam, would you?
I'm sort of going to echo Kalina on that one. I would much rather have like Mycroft Holmes' Dodge and Ease Club, where I can sit in a chair.
Mycroft
and read.
Holmes, the brother of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, and go to his little Dodge and Ease Club and sit in a quiet room and nobody bother me.
Yeah.
I'm not working on a homework. I'm not listening now. My neighbors can't sell me a beer. I'm just reading a book and I'm relaxing, and I'd much rather do that.
Yeah, and not that, you know, well, people, because anger is it's a base emotion and we all feel anger, but, you know, people deal with it differently. You know?
Yes.
It doesn't totally speak to me, but that's only because why go somewhere and pay to do it when I can do it in like my garage with my own stuff. My mother-in-law gives me a lot of hand-me-downs. They go up to the attic. I can just smash those in my garage.
Oh my gosh.
For each his own. I talk for a living, so my idea of a great vacation is to go some like a monk where they've taken a vow of silence. That sounds awesome to me.
Yeah.
It is Friday. We're hanging out in the break room. My guests are Sam Burnham of the All the Biscuits in Georgia blog, Natalie Dale, the Georgia Department of Transportation, Amy Condon, the associate editor of Savannah Magazine, and Kalina Bowler of the Real Snobs podcast. All right, if you need an anger mentor, honestly, Eminem's a pretty good role model.
You're gonna finally hear me out this time. At first I'm like, aye, you wanna throw me out, that's fine. But not for him to take my place. Are you out your mind? This couch, this TV, this whole house is mine.
Okay, the Detroit rapper is gonna re-release the Slim Shady LP. That is his chart-topping album from 1999. There is a catch. Eminem is only putting out this re-release on cassette. And I would have no way to play that. So I have to wonder, how many of you still have a cassette player?
No hands. I have my mom's boom box in storage.
I do, but I have to go on a rather extensive hunt to get one.
You bought one recently.
Yes, I bought one recently for my husband, whose dad left us some cassettes that he used to make him. And so one day I decided I wanted to find one for him. I went on Amazon, I went to Walgreens, I went to Target. There's like one at each place. And as far as what you think you're going to pay, which is like $12.99 for an old cassette player or cassette whatever, they're not that price. They're like $35 and $40. It's an investment now to get a cassette player because no one needs them or wants them.
Yeah.
They never sounded that good.
I think it's funny because I still have a lot of cassettes left from high school and college, and my wife is at home on a sick day right now listening, hi, honey, on a radio that I have in the living room that has a cassette player in it.
Quick, throw them all out before he gets home.
Yeah, we cover you.
Well, I would actually, for Eminem, see a lot of people going out and buying cassette players because Eminem is arguably in many circles one of the greatest hip hop artists now of all time. So if he's going to put out something that's retro and stuff, like you used to, you know, go out and get the records for like Earth, Wind and Fire, like my father just collected so many records, this could be the start of that new
maybe,
kind of collectible
except
era.
You leave them in your car in California where I grew up and they melt.
They will melt.
If he's smart, he creates his own brand of cassette player that you then
cassette
buy
player,
to
like
yes.
Beats by Dre to make
you
sure
your,
it stays.
Yes, Beats by Eminem.
It's like vinyl, but you need a pencil.
Right.
There we go.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on to parks. This year marks the 100th anniversary of America's National Park System. Happy birthday, parks. Parks are still very, very popular, but they don't actually get enough money from Congress to cover repairs and maintenance. So the roads are cracking, and a lot of those historic buildings are deteriorating at this point and have only a handful of years left. One idea is to hand management of the parks over to private companies. Would we support that? Hilton managing Gettysburg Battlefield, by for example.
Oh. That sounds horrible.
Who just groaned? Was that you, Amy?
Yes. Sorry. I was a park planner for 16 years for Miami-Dade County Parks for eight and for eight for the Trust for Public Land. And consistently, you had people proposing, well, why don't we turn parks over to private companies to run? The problem becomes the private companies have a profiteering bottom line, and usually stockholders they have to meet, whereas the highest and best use, and not in the sense of development, but highest and best use of a national park is the preservation and management of historic, cultural, and environmental resources. And those have great benefits, economic benefits to them that never get calculated. Even though they keep chipping away, it's like death by a thousand cuts to the national park system. So you would have to find companies that are willing to sort of bear that responsibility of that promise of the national parks for the management and preservation of these resources. And I'm not sure a company could do that and still have a good bottom line. And that's the difference between governing and preservation and business.
GDOT has actually had to use this tool in the toolbox for a lot of things that we're doing. I hate that phrase, but it is. It's a tool in the toolbox that we've had to use for several of our programs, which is public-private partnerships. And we see a good benefit in it from some of the projects that we use, like our logo program, less cost to the state. Right now, everyone's budgets are cut, and there's such a hole in what you need in money. And so you just have to be very specific in your contract with what that private partnership means, what they get out of it, what kind of control they have. And so it just has to be very specific. But I'm in favor of this. I think that there could be a lot of good things done to restore our parks, to even get more people to parks, because it's not a vacation that I ever took as a family, but I think that we could get it there if we were able to restore and maintain.
I think we've seen some of this in Georgia. If you look at what they've built at Stone Mountain, and to be honest, I like sky hiking with the rest of my kids, but that fits in Georgia. Like, I mean, it's like a sore thumb stuck out there. It just doesn't match.
It looks weird.
What Stone Mountain is.
It looks very weird.
And to me, I would hate to see that happen at Chickamauga or at Yellowstone or something like that. I would much rather let's not get private enterprise involved in our parks.
So essentially we need to find hundreds and hundreds of Ron Swansons from Parks and Recreation, and we need them to just be unleashed onto all of our national parks and our state parks.
As opposed to Amy Poehler. That only worked because Amy Poehler was balancing him out, yeah.
Well, you know, he was somebody who just wanted, he was that person and just loved the land as the land, and he had a respect for it. And I, you know, not to spoil, you know, the finale. Oh my gosh, that show.
Okay. Let's not get distracted.
Right? Sorry. But in terms of national parks and things like that, somebody who has that mentality and or agencies or even companies that have that mentality that are about management of the land and preservation, we need people like that in our parks.
We are out of time in the break room. I want to say thank you to all my guests. You just heard Kalina Bowler, co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. Amy Condon is the associate editor for Savannah Magazine. Natalie Dale, spokesperson for the Georgia Department of Transportation. And Sam Burnham curates the All the Biscuits in Georgia blog. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.